Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med mediehuset Ingeniøren, Automatikmessen Automatik, AM Hub, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Jeg hedder Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia. Kommer kunstig intelligens til at slå os ihjel, eller er det bare en skør Hollywood-fantasi? Meningerne er delte, men til gengæld så er der efterhånden bred enighed om, eller i hvert fald bred enighed i Vesten, om at vi skal have regelsæt og etik omkring, hvad kunstig intelligens må og skal kunne. Den danske uddannelses- og forskningsminister Tommy Ahlers, han udtalte for nylig, at det er vigtigt at præge udviklingen af kunstig intelligens, så den er i overensstemmelse med danske værdier. Hvad det betyder og hvordan man fører det ud i livet, det er et mere åbent spørgsmål. I denne og næste udgave af Tektopia, der prøver jeg at stille skarp på, hvad og hvordan. Vi kommer i gang med en diskussion om kunstig intelligens, og hvad vi skal gøre for ikke at havne i sådan en Hollywood-dystopi, når vi inviterer en kraftfuld og måske intelligent teknologi ind i vores hverdag. Jeg har taget to folk med i programmet i dag. Det er forsker og foredragsholder om kunstig intelligens, Nell Watson fra Irland, og teknologikritiker Nicola Danilov fra Canada. Vi lægger ud med Nell Watson.
Hello, I'm Nell Watson of Singularity University and EthicsNet.
Jeg mødte Nell Watson til konferencen Driving IT hos IDA, hvor hun talte om kunstig intelligens og etik.
And you're here to talk about artificial intelligence and ethics. What is your message?
Indeed. Artificial intelligence is advancing, as we know, at an incredible rate, and machines are now able to perform all kinds of tasks that human beings can do in about 1 second or so of processing time. So that's recognizing people or translating between languages and text and speech and that sort of thing. However, as we integrate machines into our lives ever more strongly, we find that we're being influenced by machines in many different ways. Machines are now starting to act as our secretaries and our butlers and an aide-de-camp, you know, selecting for us an ideal wine or a good place to meet with our friends. And perhaps machines are even going to be mapping out our values and helping to understand the things that we find, you know, truly special in this world and finding us products and services that map with that. Machines are very, very influential upon our personal psychology and upon our broader society as well. And if we are to enjoy this revolution, we need to have machines that respect our boundaries, which announce themselves to be autonomous systems and not human beings, and which apply their technologies and their capabilities for helping to create human flourishing instead of trying to exploit human beings and go for their vulnerable areas.
Men den smalle form for kunstig intelligens, vi har i dag, altså en kunstig intelligens i maskinlæring, der kan spille skak eller go, eller måske køre en bil, ja, er den overhovedet farlig? Personligt har jeg svært ved at blive bange for et stykke software, som spiller go, eller for Siri-assistenten på min iPhone. Men Nell Watson, hun har et bredere perspektiv.
At the moment, indeed, most of these technologies are applied to very narrow domains. So it's an algorithm or suite of algorithms which do a very specific task rather than something more generalizable. However, one of the things I'm going to mention today is that we're now entering an era of what's called meta-learning, which is where you train an algorithm on multiple small tasks. And rather than having one algorithm that's very, very good at one thing, you have more of a generalizable intelligence, a system which is able to cope with multiple different problems and even to generalize a bit of learning between how it solves those problems. And this, I believe, is truly the path towards something like a generalizable artificial intelligence. And so these kinds of issues are sneaking up on us at quite a fast rate, beyond perhaps what we might be immediately aware of.
So what is your response to this development? What should we do?
In my view, it's very important that we teach machines about culture and about values and about morality. In our human civilization, we don't necessarily expect a 4 or 6 year old child to know right from wrong just yet at that stage in their personal development. But we're already starting to teach them about manners. People don't like to be pointed at or stared at, or people don't like it when you make loud noises in a quiet place like a restaurant or a museum. If we can begin to teach those kinds of basic instructions or rules about social engagement, manners, congeniality, how to make society more pleasant, as we do to very young children, if we can teach this to machines, then we can start this process of making machines more pro-social and evolve that towards something more like a sophisticated morality in the future. To facilitate that, well, I observe that machine learning depends very much on data sets. So those are examples that machines can learn from, sort of like virtual experiences in a sense. And we've seen just how important data sets are in the past. We've seen data sets such as ImageNet, created by Fei-Fei Li and her team, and just how much that transformed and revolutionized machine vision. I believe that if we are to create pro-social machines, we need to have a data set of pro-social behaviors. And we need to collect that from many different cultures and demographies all around the world. And so we can begin to map the space of human values. And so I have co-founded the EthicsNet project, which aims to form a community to create this data set or data sets of pro-social behaviors to help teach machines what nice behavior looks like to different people.
Neil Watson, altså opdrage eller programmere kunstig intelligens til at forstå og begå sig i menneskets verden. Men vi skal også være et godt eksempel for maskinlæring, hvis det skal lykkes.
In practice, does this mean that whenever you program any kind of artificial intelligence, machine learning, whatever it would be, you should run this data set first?
Well, we don't necessarily program machines or artificial intelligence these days. Often it's more about introducing them to experiences and, you know, getting them to learn from themselves, from what they see. I think that if we are to have machines which engage with us in the social sphere, or which act as envoys or ambassadors for us to liaise with other human beings, we're going to want to have ones which are responsible and which are courteous and polite. We don't like it when our dog chases after cars, and we don't like it when our child swears in public. Partly this is because it reflects badly on ourselves. And so I think that we're going to want to have very nice envoys representing us in the physical and virtual worlds. And so absolutely, if we are to enjoy machines in this kind of way, we are going to have to teach them what pleasant behavior looks like.
Hvis vi kigger ud over verden, så har vi forskellige værdier alt efter, om vi kommer fra Danmark, Saudi-Arabien, Kina eller fra Trumps version af USA. Kan man på det grundlag skabe en global etik for kunstig intelligens, eller kommer vi til at se kunstig intelligens med mange forskellige etiske grundholdninger?
I'm just wondering, what is the difference between pleasant behavior and moral values? Because, I mean, we have different values here than people do in Saudi Arabia or in China. So how would you introduce this in a global context?
Absolutely. These are very important questions. We obviously don't want to have one set of sort of master rules or master ethics and expect everyone else to sort of fit into that. I think that would be a horrible idea and not very practical at all. Different cultures, different values developed in different parts of the world for reasons of things like geography and environment. You know, certain cultures value things more because in that area, for example, certain things are more scarce. And it's a good thing that we have a variation of cultures to suit these different geographies and different realities of people's lives. I think that's why we need to have a data set which is maximally as diverse in its ability to capture different forms of values. And then from that, my hope is that we can find those basic norms, those things that in almost all cultures unite us, the things that, you know, all human beings will value or will find objectionable, and to sort of map a zone of safety. What we're trying to find is not so much right from wrong, but sort of what is the zone of tolerable or zone of, yeah, okay, I can live with that. You know, maybe that's not my cup of tea, but you do your thing, I'll do mine, and that's okay. If we can create that sort of zone of safety, then we can have machines which are unlikely to step on other people's toes or trigger them or freak them out.
Neil Watson arbejder altså med at skabe etisk ansvarlig kunstig intelligens, blandt andet i foreningen EthicsNet. Nu skal vi hilse på teknologikritiker Nikola Danilov fra Canada, som besøgte Ida ganske få dage efter Neil Watson. Han er noget mere dyster i sin vision for fremtiden i selskab med kunstig intelligens.
My name is Nikola Danilov. I'm the founder of SingularityWeblog.com and the host of Singularity.fm, which was the first podcast in the world about issues related to the technological singularity, transhumanism, human enhancement, and of course ethics. Because if there's one permeating message that sort of has been there throughout my work in the past 10 years is the claim that I put forward, which is that technology is not enough. It is necessary, but it's not sufficient. It is not enough.
And since your podcast is named Singularity and so on, I need to ask you, are you associated with the Singularity University?
So I am an alumni of Singularity University. I did the graduate studies program in 2011. So I actually spent the whole summer there, 10 weeks at a time. But I don't have any formal association with SU in any form or shape. And I doubt that they would endorse much or anything of what I say. So we are totally separate entities.
And what is your background before doing this?
And so my undergraduate degree was in philosophy, political science and economics, or what we used to call PPE. And then I did a master's degree in political science. My previous focus was on armed conflict. And the way I discovered the singularity was when I was looking for a thesis topic to write my master's research paper, I wanted to look for something new, something fresh. And so that was around 2006 when one day as I was watching the news, I was watching the very first bombings of targets by drones. And at that time, it was only the CIA that had maybe half a dozen Predator drones that were poorly adapted by using Hellfire missiles to kill people. And so I wrote a research paper called Hacking Destiny, Critical Security at the Intersection of Machine and Human Intelligence. And in that paper, my thesis was very simple. It was that the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan were not the clash of civilizations, as Samuel Huntington would claim us or would make us believe, but rather it was the first time in the history of our civilization where increasingly automated machines were taking increasingly automated decisions as per whether a human being would live or die. And I believe that was a very new phenomenon that was happening for the first time in the history of our civilization. And of course, since then, now we have 80 countries producing drones, most of them armed, or many of them armed at least. We have armed drones deployed at the DMZ between North and South Korea, for example, and China, Russia, Israel, India, Pakistan, you name it, everyone's producing drones nowadays, including, by the way, terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and the Taliban. So now we even have amateurs and state actors all using drones for surveillance or for warfare.
Neil Nikola Danilov har en baggrund i konfliktforskning, og i forbindelse med det begyndte han at interessere sig for militære droner, da de blev brugt i krigen i Afghanistan, fordi han pludselig så autonome maskiner tage beslutninger om at slå mennesker ihjel. Så hvad tænker han egentlig om at være menneske i en AI-tidsalder?
How does AI change the way we are humans?
Oh, AI would change and challenge everything about us. So, humanity, or what it means to be human, has a lot to do with our story. The story of where do we come from, who we are, and where are we going to. And AI will change and challenge that narrative tremendously. So first of all, are we going to enhance and empower ourselves with AI, or are we going to replace ourselves with AI? That's an open question, and it could play out either way or somewhere in between. And AI would be this entity, presumably, that we can live in peace and harmony with, and we can enhance our power with, and our wisdom and our knowledge with, by, or we can destroy ourselves with, or it can simply eliminate us altogether, because it can replace us just like mammals replace the dinosaurs. And so we have to figure out, what does it mean to be human in the age of AI? What does it mean to be an AI? How do we define each of those terms? And are those two terms mutually exclusive or mutually compatible? In other words, can we peacefully coexist together in a world of prosperity for the benefit of us all, even though one of us is biologically based and the other is carbon or non-biologically based? In my opinion, it is possible to make it work for everybody, but it's going to take a lot of effort, and it's not self-evident that it would simply happen by luck. In other words, we have to be deliberate and cognizant about the potential issues in order to improve the probability of success.
Nikola Danilov er enig med Neil Watson om, at selvom en smal intelligens måske ikke er særligt klog, så kan den stadig være farlig for mennesker. Men mest fordi det farligste er dumme mennesker med adgang til kraftig teknologi.
But if you look at artificial intelligence today, it's mainly machine learning that we see, and it's mainly what you would call weak AI. So why are you afraid that it will eliminate human beings?
So I'm not afraid, actually. My biggest concern is not artificial intelligence. And, you know, there's many people like Bill Gates, Steve Wozniak, Elon Musk, even the late Dr. Stephen Hawking, who said that the arrival of artificial intelligence may spell the end of humanity. Now, I personally am not so afraid from artificial intelligence. What I'm most afraid of is human stupidity. And because we don't even need an AGI, or what's called artificial general intelligence, opposed to what you just called artificial narrow intelligence, to destroy ourselves, right? We can have all kinds of narrow AI, which leads to complete self-destruction of humanity. And the reason and the agent to blame for that would not be the AI itself. The AI would be the tool. In fact, the reason if that happens would be humanity itself, because we are our own worst enemies. AI, at least for as long as it's not AGI and it doesn't have a will or a conscience of its own, it is going to be designed by us, and therefore it would be our intellectual or mind children. And we are responsible for being the best possible role models for our children, be it biological or be it technological. And if we design AI to kill, for example, or destroy, it doesn't have to be a very smart AI for it to be successful in accomplishing its programmed goal, but it wouldn't be its fault that it's been programmed that way. It would be our fault, which is the reason why we have, for example, global petitions signed by tens of thousands of people that were started by the Future of Life Institute, organized by Max Tegmark and Nick Bostrom, in order to ask the best scientists in the world to sign up their names that they would not work for any AI that's not used for peaceful purposes. And so we don't need necessarily artificial general intelligence to destroy ourselves. That could be done by very stupid intelligence.
Nikola Danilov, han bruger termen AI-isme om en fremtid, hvor menneskets destruktive adfærd overfor andre arter vendes mod os selv, når vi først har skabt maskiner, som er klogere end os selv, og det er virkelig, virkelig noget skidt.
I use that term in order to describe our modus operandi of currently treating all the other species on our planet. And basically, our current principle is, I am smarter than you, which is to say, humanity feels that we are the peak of the pyramid. We are at the top of the food chain. We are the peak of evolution. We are, as Stuart Brand put it, we are gods, so as we might as well start acting as such, right? Or as Dostoevsky said, God is dead. And now, with humanism, humanity is at the peak of the food chain. So we are the measure of everything. We are the most intelligent species of the universe. And our principle is, I'm smarter than you compared to all the other species, be it the great apes, our cousins, with whom we share 99% of our genetic code, or all the other animals, the dolphins, the whales, it doesn't matter. All those animals currently are facing, in many cases, complete population collapse. In many cases, they've gone extinct or they are about to go extinct. Scientists talk about the sixth extinction right now, which is due to humanity's action. And the numbers can be debated a little bit about, but we roughly kill about 70-some billion animals per year annually for food or for fun. And something like 1.3 trillion fish and other aquatic organisms annually. And our sole justification is this moral principle, which is to say, we are smarter than you, therefore we can do whatever we want. Now let me flip this around and see how we feel on the other end, on the receiving end, because what this principle means is that we don't treat others with the golden rule the way we would like to be treated, which is to say with dignity and respect. Now imagine we have this new intelligent species. It could be an alien species from space, or it could be a species that's artificial intelligence species of intelligent that's born on our planet. Either way, they would be smarter than us. And imagine they come up with this thing called AI-ism or alienism, some kind of ism, which is very parallel to humanism. And of course, instead of humanism and putting humans in the center of the universe, they would put AI-ism, therefore AIs in the center or aliens in the center as the primary being, the measure of everything. And because they would be smarter than us, they can embrace the same modus operandi that we currently have and say, well, we are smarter than you, therefore we can kill you for fun, for food, for sports, we can capture your life and put you in the zoo, we can make pets of you, or we can do medical experiments on you. And we have no moral standing to say that they don't have the right to do so, since that's exactly the moral framework that we currently use to treat all the other species around. And so one way to perhaps, and there's no guarantee, but one way to perhaps improve our chances is to start already treating other species as ends in themselves and not merely as a means to an end, not as meat machines. And we can say, if we were to ever fall into that unfortunate position where we stop being the smartest species around, we can say, look, we did our best to treat all the other species with dignity and respect. We didn't kill when we didn't have to, and we treated everyone fairly to the best of our abilities. So hopefully, likewise, we get treated the same way. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that they would necessarily have to abide by that principle. They may decide to ignore it, and they may do what they want to do. But it still doesn't make it right for us to do what we are currently doing. And it still is better for us to do the right thing, not only because it may serve us better in the long run, but simply because it's the right thing to be done in principle, in its own right.
Svaret på hans dystopi, det kan være en ny historie om det at være menneske. Menneske i en maskinalder, i en kunstig intelligens tidsalder. En samlet fortælling, som kan bringe os videre og samtidig skabe et liv i balance med kunstig intelligens.
So basically, my claim, and I've been influenced a lot by the work of Joseph Campbell and the work of Yuval Noah Harari, both of whom are must-read, in my opinion. And both of them have noticed the fact that we live in a civilization of story. We are wired for stories. We are meaning-making machines that like to tell story. And story is the thing that unites us. So, for example, when Kennedy said, let's put a man on the moon, thousands of people who never met each other, never knew each other, never knew who's good, who's bad, supposedly, and who could be trusted and who couldn't, were able, due to that narrative, were able to coordinate and work together so that we can accomplish that great goal to put a man on the moon. And if you think about it, our civilization is a civilization of story. And so it turns out it is the story, and by the way, the most popular story in the world is money, right? You can't eat it. You can't use it for any useful purposes. It has lost any practicality whatsoever. But the only thing that it has going for it is a story. And as long as we all believe in the story of money, it works. The moment we stop believing in that story, it doesn't work, right? And yet people kill and die for money. People kill and die for God. People kill and die for their country. People do all kinds of things for their corporation or for their nation, for their religious group, and so on, for their ethnicity. All of those are stories. So what I'm saying is that our civilization is approaching a breakpoint which requires a new revolution. And every new revolution, if you look at it historically speaking, basically is providing a new answer, a new narrative to the same age-old questions about how do we govern ourselves? How do we come together? How do we collectively organize ourselves for the peaceful cohabitation of our whole civilization? Now, it seems that our current narratives are running out of steam because there are so many technological, economic, social, and scientific changes that are coming together simultaneously that our past stories seem to be incapable of providing new answers in the context of all those changes around us. And this threatens the very existence of our civilization because we seem to be unable to come together and to cooperate. And my claim is that if you look at it, all the major problems faced by humanity today are not national problems. Things like global warming, pollution, environmental destruction, soil erosion, species collapse, those are all beyond borders. They can only be solved at the global level. And what that means is you need a new narrative. You need a new narrative that would put Danes and Swedes and Norwegians and Canadians and Chinese and Africans and Australians all together, people from different nations and backgrounds, believing in the same narrative, just like the NASA astronauts believed in let's put a man on the moon. So we need that kind of new narrative to unite us, to work, to help us work together to produce that new narrative.
Vi har brug for en ny historie om, hvad det vil sige at være menneske i en tidsalder, hvor maskiner i form af kunstig intelligens måske bliver klogere end os. Hvordan lever vi sammen med den slags skabninger? Se, det har Neil Watson måske et svar på.
I certainly do have a concern about the future of aligning the goals of AI with the goals of humanity in general. However, perhaps my greatest fear is that of a sort of narcissistic injury to human beings. Traditionally, if we look in at history, most human beings tend to go a little bit crazy when somebody points out that certain assumptions they've made about the world may not be true. When Copernicus and Galileo showed that the Earth revolved around the sun, it forced people to question the wisdom of the church for the first time in a major way. And I think that led to the reformations and things we saw in centuries after that. A little bit later, Darwin came along with his Origin of Species and the Descent of Man. And people thought, this is an amazing idea. We mustn't tell anyone. And Nietzsche, you know, prophesied that, you know, God is dead and we have killed him in the sense that an age of nihilism was likely to come, And in many ways, we saw that in the 20th century of two horrible world wars, a Cold War, and all kinds of horrible totalitarian destruction as people searched for new forms of values that they felt that perhaps religion could no longer give them in a meaningful sense. And so my fear, really, rather than AI taking over the world, is that AI may show us to be naked emperors, may help us to see that perhaps our assumptions about the world may not be what we believe them to be. And this may cause a narcissistic injury that causes people to go slightly crazy. And I think we're already starting to see something like that. In the last 10 years or so, we've seen a massive polarization of people pulling away from the sort of the center ground of thought into little clusters of extreme thought, more and more increasingly. And I think in some ways, machine intelligence is clustering us as human beings, you know, into these sort of stronger and stronger categories with less dilution. And my fear is that this will lead to people not being able to have a proper conversation with each other, because they might use the same words, but those words mean completely different things to each other. And so that leads to the question of how do we have a common culture if we don't have a shared narrative across those different parts of culture? So for me, that's something that I'm most scared about. I think AI has contributed to that. And I'm very concerned about how we can mitigate this ongoing polarization in society and help to bring people back together. It's my hope that initiatives that help people to understand the space of human values may lead to technologies that can actually help us to understand each other and see each other as potential friends rather than potential foes.
Kan vi faktisk blive bedre mennesker gennem at bruge kunstig intelligens som et spejl, som Neil Watson og Nikola Danilov de foreslår? Debatten er i hvert fald åbnet. Jeg linker til de to fra tektopia.dk, og i næste udgave af Tektopia, der kan du møde Irina Sklovski, der er lektor på ITU og koordinator på VIRT EU-projektet. Det handler om værdier og etik i teknologi. Hun har sammen med Foreningen af Nordiske Ingeniører, ANE, lavet et projekt om kunstig intelligens og etik, og det har jeg talt med hende om. Det kan du høre mere om i næste uge. Vi skal også lige huske, at vi har fået et podkort fra min kollega Anders Høgh Nissen på Ingeniørens podcast Transformator.
I denne uges udgave af Transformator, der skal vi især tale om de kommende store datacentre i Danmark. Udover at de selvfølgelig skal levere cloud-tjenester til hele verden, så har en af idéerne med dem også været, at den overskydende varme fra de mange tusinde computere skulle bruges til at lune lidt i huse og lejligheder ude hos danskerne. Men lige nu ser det ud til, at langt størstedelen af varmen fra de kommende centre vil blive sendt direkte op i luften som spild. Det fortæller Niels Kjemtrup.
Og alt den varme, den, som det er nu, der leder man den ud. Man hiver kold luft ind i bunden af centret, og så smider man varm luft ud i toppen af centret.
Hør mere om datacentre og også om selvkørende biler, blæksprutter og GPS'er i denne uges udgave af Transformator.
Du har lyttet til Tektopia, som udkommer hver mandag. Du kan deltage i vores debatter om teknologi i Facebook-gruppen Tektopia Backstage. Du kan følge os på Twitter, og der hedder vi @tektopia.dk. Eller også så kan du smide en e-mail til mig, henrik@tektopia.dk. På genhør næste uge, og må din kunstig intelligens være med dig. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med mediehuset Ingeniøren, Automatikmessen Automatik, AM Hub, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Jeg hedder Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia.